Hello, everyone. It's Mike J, and I pushed the wrong button again. Let me see if I can get this working. I keep forgetting. You know what I got to do? Just hit resume. Extra version. Okay, here we are. S, Dis X Basic Practical Program Class 4. We've got a lot to do today, and you'll see in my advice that I'm doing too much, but I keep thinking that even though I'm not going strictly by slides or strictly by an order or strictly by a framework, that the casual nature in which I'm presenting the material will be better to listen to than the humdrum of trying to go through a more concrete formula. In other words, I'm teaching the basics for concrete, abstract, and formal reasoning at the same time using a different system to do that. So that's my explanation for why the AI is beating me up after every class, and then me not really listening. It just goes to show you the problems of your personality can persist even with good feedback. So we've got the basic practical index if you need to find anything. We've got the IMAL visual diagrams. That's been redone. Almost has been redone. I don't know why we keep getting that big space there. Do you, admin? I don't know. So let's go ahead and see if we can fix that diagram. It may just be something simple, or we may need to just delete the space from the graphic or the header. Here's something new. Now, I mentioned this in the earlier class. I just wanted you to have this material. This actually goes in our reference material. We have all these reference models that we're cataloging for you. Later on down the line, they'll be very helpful because you can just search the site and zip over their ladder of inference. This is basically the AI assistant's rendition of the ladder of inference. And I like it okay. Actually, earlier on in the coach training that I used to do back in around 1999, 2000, I had a model also, and I may just add that to the bottom here so you can see that. But I like this. It gives you a good idea of what the ladder inference, and I can't tell you how important it is, especially for those of you that do this work beyond just the basic level. Here's the ladder of inference as I described it. Okay. And here's the ladder of inference with the additions naming the Myers-Briggs type indicator ladder of inference. And you notice this contracting loop where our TNF dominance will tend to go from conclusion to judgment, conclusion becoming data over here of what to notice next. So that's how easy logic can lead you in a direction that you don't either go or understand. And then here's for us expanders, and you'll notice that I solve problems by expanding, which is part of the problem that the AI is continuing to come back and say, don't do so much of that nicely. And then of course I ignore it. But there is that that ladder for you in a graphic that I think is really helpful, because once you understand that people solve problems in different ways, you'll start to notice those ways, and then you can meet them where they are. Remember, meeting somebody where they are in problem finding and solving is a very important part of the process if you're going to really, one, decide whether you found the right problem or you even want to solve it. And two, sometimes I know the belief work that I did with Morty Lefkoe and Shelley, is it Shelley Lefkoe that's still running that? I haven't talked to her in such a long time. Morty left us, but his work was is that as soon as you objectify a belief, it tends to have less hold on you. And he did a whole lot of work around that. I really like that, because the tendency here is for us, when we have these deeper beliefs and we can take a perspective on those, we sometimes see that they're not as big a deal as we were making them, and they tend to soften and even in some cases be substituted and disappear. And then the problems associated with those beliefs disappear as well. Okay. the AI will get mad at me for that. Okay, I just wanted to show you that that's up for you, and we will have a reference link at some point that you can click on and see all the different models that we have stood on the shoulders of. I copied and pasted the I didn't really do it, but admin did it. The advice for class four. And this is a fun place to start, so let's do that. Make class four even cleaner. Use one basic exchange only, no second demo, no advanced sidebar unless placed after the class as advanced note. Okay. When you go back and look at the after action reviews, now remember, I'm doing an after action review for my role in this process of conveying information and ideas. And then administratively, we're doing an after action review to look really at what happened, what was done, so you can see things in a different way. In other words, all of us have different learning styles and different motivation and different what's important and senses of urgency and leverage and low-hanging fruit. So we need to present the material in different ways. And one of the ways in which we're doing that is after action review. When you go see the after action review, you can see a lot of stuff going on there. Here's the suggested class four theme. Do not interpret the lift. I think that's a little bit confusing. It's funny that the AI assistant wants me to work less complex, and then it sends very different, difficult things to understand. Do not interpret the lift. Well, you would have to know the helping functions, queuing, scaffolding support, and lift. What it's saying here is don't anticipate or interpret something that's not there, even though you see the connections may not be there. And it's the same thing working with any neural net. When you're doing next token prediction, which is what this is saying, do not interpret the lift. In other words, don't put something there that's not there yet. And you may exchange fluency and sophistication and smart words with the fact there's lift when in fact it's hollow. In other words, when the person depends on the lift and they put tension on it, it collapses. So that's part of the reason why you don't interpret the lift. I think that's a very complex topic to focus on class four theme. But since I'm not very focused anyway, it won't bother me. Now, look, this is what we did last time, and I corrected the AI assistant's example. Now, remember, it puts in these examples, and I'm not sure why it does this, except it goes back to its pre-training and say, okay, when you do things, you should make an example because people understand it better. Well, some people do. In other words, some people need examples. A lot of people don't. Some people need consistent presentation over a period of time before things begin to click in. Some people are skeptical and they're never quite convinced. So they always spend their time kind of being critical, kind of looking at it. Well, why would this work? This is not that big a deal. He's making too big a deal of this, stuff like that. And then, of course, there's others, people like me who are dominant intuitives. We are convinced automatically because we only need a few pieces of data to then project what that means. Now, remember, intuition is a wonderful thing, but 50% of the time it's wrong. Okay, so you have to remember that. Now, when we look at this small exchange that the AI assistant chose as an example, but didn't really choose as an exchange that we would debrief, I want to go back through this. First of all, it did clean things up. So it learned, and I didn't, well, I did tell it in the thing that we should put pause and breathe in brackets there. I feel behind, pause and breathe, behind. Yes, I'm reacting to the feeling, not the task. That's a very complex statement, by the way, and that's very cool. At the same time, what the heck does it mean? Now, here's the interesting thing about the AI assistant. It always has to contextualize things. It always has to invent things that were not there. Think about this. First of all, was there anything that related to enough in that exchange? Anything? Now, remember, this is a selective part of the conversation. This is just a zoom in on a particular part of the conversation. I'll try to do that in the example today to show you how I get back to the conversation that was occurring before we took this, made this, tried to create this selective experience. Okay. And hopefully it's a good experience, a learning experience. I feel behind. Behind? Yes, I'm reacting to the feeling, not the task. It suggests that the helper might say, enough to begin. That's in total interpretation. First of all, where did enough come from? In other words, if enough is in the helper, you want to test that first. That's an assumption that you have. So you need to make a ping. And the way you might do that, although we discourage you doing the robotic repeating things back after one, you got to take a breath and not do it again for a while. But in this particular case, if that was really a burning feeling that you had, enough. And I think that would be a disconnect. I don't think it would be good. But the AI assistant is still not understanding how to use this system because it's doing an interpretation because in its value set, in its neural net, in its weight, it's taught to finish. It's taught to interpret. It's taught to move things along. It's taught to use less tokens. It's taught all kinds of things. Except with Claude, Claude is taught to use as many tokens as it can, which is why I don't use Claude. But in this particular case, enough to begin, I don't like it at all. It's just way out of place. It's an interpretation. Where did begin come from? I feel behind. Behind? Yes, I'm reacting to the feeling, not the task. Where did begin come from? In other words, it could be, but the thing is, you don't want to use things and you don't want to make assumptions about things that don't yet exist. And you're not sure in this particular case. Enough to begin is a great example of why you do not interpret because the feeling of behind, the reacting to feeling, not the task, is now interpreted as enough to begin, even though it's seeding the close, which I like. At the same time, it doesn't work. And see, this is why you got to take your assumptions and beliefs and set them over there while you still can see them and hold on to them and know they're coming, but do not get captured by them. In other words, they will capture you. They will choose you. And you have to be careful that what it chooses in you does not do this kind of error. And this is a big error because what you've done is you have projected capability onto the person's problem-solving approach or system that they have not shown, which means they will need you to queue up their problem efficacy, and you're not always there. I know it took me a decade to understand this because my first decade of helping and formally coaching, I did this. And it was great as long as they were in contact and they could come back for cues because that was the scaffolding they needed. And then they could usually find the support between my urging them to go on and my capability cues and scaffold that they would get some lift. But the problem was when there were distance between us and there too long a time between us, their system reverted back to their old system of capability because systems of capability have an evolution speed of their own. This is the main reason. I know I'm going into a sidebar, but this is the main reason that people saying that AI will come in and they will do all your grunt work and then you'll be free to do more complex work. No, you won't, not unless you're capable. And see, this is the blank slate again, coming back and projecting into people capability that is not there, that potential that is not there, capacity that is not there. People will not automatically work at the next level. And this is the problem when you get these AI software engineers who've never had 1 ounce of management and leadership training, all working non-hierarchical, which means everybody's at everybody. They say flatten the whole thing. This engineer is equal to this, although they do call them a junior and senior and stuff, which is kind of a cop-out. At the same time, they know inherently that junior engineers cannot do the same thing that senior engineers do. So they're already creating a hierarchy, but they like to keep everything on the level so the juniors and seniors can talk to each other and stuff like that, which is a joke because the way we evolve means that capability aggregates in us based on our internal generation that most of us get through some form of nature via nurture. I'll give you that. It's like Mark Buckingham said in his book. I think it's something like putting strengths to work, or it was one of the go strengths or something like that. But I remember the page number 56. He said, look, about 55% of what's generated in you comes with the package. In other words, it's due to your epigenetic nature. Okay. That's kind of the nature of the nurture word. Okay. The other part is your adaptation to the environment and your experiences and your learning and stuff like that. The largest part of who we are is being generated by what we came with. It's like Darryl Royal saying when he was asked in 19, I think it was 69, what's he going to do when they go to play Arkansas for the national championship? And I remember this quote. He said, we're going to dance with the girl who brung us, which means we're not going to do anything else that we haven't been doing all season. Well, that's kind of the way people are. People do not change much. Some are more changeable than others, but everyone tends to adapt. People's brains are not as plastic as the neurologists. What do they call them? Oh my God, I can't even remember their names. Anyway, the neuroscientists, the people who deal with the brain, they continue to come back and be optimistic about everything and say, oh, our brains are very plastic. Even when you get my age, their brain's very plastic. Well, I'm not thinking that's true because most of the time we revert to the things. I've talked to a lot of people like me who are founders and innovators of particular models that they push their whole life from their books, their writings, their work, and everything. They weren't changing at all as they got older. They were more narrow and more convinced about their models than ever. They were not plastic at all. So I like the word adaptive rather than plastic, because if you remember that we're working with a triune, a generator, a protector for ego position, and a moderator, which deals with the outer world, then you begin to understand that the moderator does most of the work in getting the system, the generator, what's being generated and what's being protected to begin if there is opportunity to step back and say, oh, yeah, normally I would do this and that, but I'm going to moderate that because this particular environment doesn't call for that. So I was pushed by this simple exchange into quite complex work, but it's really important that you get this. This is the foundation of dynamic inquiry, is that you do not project your capability onto others. And because you're doing that, you now take responsibility for their outcomes, which means you have now entered the state of perhaps doing harm. And you, if you don't want to do harm, don't project. So the thing is, this comment by the assistant to make the example complete and close it up right quick is not a good one, because it does makes all those mistakes around PCC. It interprets that this person being helped is in fact sophisticated enough, although there's no indication other than perhaps the, kind of cryptic, I'm reacting to the feeling, not the task, that that comment is going to fit their system. First of all, there was no enough mentioned, and I don't even think there's enough here, because if there were enough, then they wouldn't feel behind, because they would know that enough is doing what they can and letting the stuff behind catch up when you can. I mean, that's a whole different philosophy, but that's what you see in enough. And then begin. Who said anything about beginning? Obviously, they haven't begun. So you're projecting beginning as a solution to their problem. And in my view, you haven't found the problem yet, so you're already solving it. So even though this is a short exchange, it's extremely powerful to introduce a lot of the models that are behind this process and why. I think it's important to explain, well, why is that not a good thing to say? It seems like a good thing to say. No, it's not. And what you're doing is violating a lot of the rules that we have about projecting your capability into that third space. You know, there's the person helping space, there's a person being helped space, and then when you're working together, there's actually a third space created. You want to be careful about what you put in that third space. What you want is the person being helped to venture into that space. And your work is to get them to get into that third space so that they take perspective on their perspective if it's possible. And if it's not possible, then you help them get the milk. But that's the selective part of this change. So in my view, that's a huge teaching point. And what let's look at what it says. When the PBH, person being helped, reaches a useful insight, do not add interpretation. So funny. Do not say, so the first move may be noticing the feeling before choosing the task that takes over. The PBH already did enough. So the interpretation of that enough to begin was really a projection by the person helping onto this. So it doesn't work. You know, I go back to the story of, you know, in Nebraska and Iowa, they have lots of pigs, you know. So they used to always have pig jokes. And I sort of grew up, you know, in the line between Wyoming and Nebraska. And so the pig jokes sort of hit. But it's like teaching a pig to sing. Doesn't work. Annoys the pig. So again, these are important things. That might be the thing to teach here, you know. Don't try to teach a pig to sing. Doesn't work. Annoys the pig. When the PBH finds lift, do not keep helping. Okay. That's okay. Don't overhelp. This is basic, concrete, and high value. It is, if you take my consideration, that the helper in this example really made some egregious mistakes, and everyone will say, oh, you just made a big deal out of a small thing. No, it's not a small thing, because what happens is that if you don't realize what you're doing in projecting your own capability, which means the cues, scaffolding, support, and lift will be based on where you are, not they are, that you can do harm, because person takes on more than they think, because the helper said do this, or the trainer said do this, or the coach said do this, or my manager said do this, or the leader said we could do that. And so yes, part of that is part of the process of getting people to stretch. At the same time, we don't change much. So if you're going to go around stretching people, you better remember that it's mostly about you, not about them. We give people the opportunity to see if they can adapt, and rather than trying to change everybody, because changing people, you mean when you change people, you have to change who they are. You have to change their identity. You have to change their role. You have to do all those are very tough changes. Now, I'm not saying people can't do it, but it's very difficult. And so we find ourselves in the seventh decade of our life doing the same things that we know we shouldn't do in the first two, three, four, five, 6 decades of life. But did we change? No. Do we have a different idea about it? Yes. Are we able to live with it and adapt? Yes, to a certain extent, until we die because of not doing things that we should have done to stay alive. So it's a very interesting process, all of this, and hopefully that means something to you. What I'm going to do right now is something that the AI said don't do. I want to go over and just do a quick, oh, what do we got here? Oh, okay, we're working somewhere here. Let me see where we are. Let's see if we can just get up a new one here. Oh my God, we got racing. We got log in. Let's see if we can get this logged in. There we go. So we get in on side of our stuff. I keep doing this in the same chat. You're ready, but I need, where are my chats? Where are my chats? Did they change the UI again? I don't know. I guess I should have checked it before. I did. Okay. Try it again. I don't know where you are, but where did you do? What did you do with all my chats? There we are. All right. I'm staying in this chat. The context window is getting really huge. As you can see, I was doing some work in there, but I keep putting it in this chat because it's all related, because I'm going to ask it to review a chapter on SDSX for my new book, and I want it to have everything it needs. So in this particular case, are you ready for a basic exchange in class? Give it some context. By the way, the assistant did an amazing job. It's amazing how fast these things are moving quickly. Okay, start when ready. So let's do another one. Let's pretend like we're having a conversation, and I have seen an opening, and I'm going to start a selective experience. So remember, what you didn't see is the conversation that led up to this. And then I mentioned that in an example with the CEO that we talked about fear, maybe of making this more. That's great. Okay, so I'm going to try something here. I hate typing it out. Let's see if it picks it up. It usually does. So in this, I'll probably get some teaching. Yeah. Keeping the exchange basic enough that fear does not become the lesson too soon. Now, here's something I'm going to show you. It's maybe a little bit more advanced, but what it's doing, it's called a juxtaposition. And what you do is you take away what it said and you give it what it didn't say. Okay. And if you did, let me see how it responds to this. So this is what it's basically saying here is, did you do this? And I told you not to use and with any other thing. I should have taken my own message there and put if you did and put dot 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 before it. If I did, I might start explaining fear instead of staying with it. That would make the exchange too much about my interpretation. Okay, I'll do something here that goes out of the model. Oh, I forgot while I was typing because this light on my screen is keeping the bar too low unless I put the cursor down there. Oh, and what was I going to say? Heck, I forgot that thought while I was fooling around. That's how fast thoughts disappear, and the fact that you have to relax enough to let those go by when they go by because you think you want to do something and test something, and then it goes away on you. Okay, so I'll go back and just re-input that into my neural net. If I did, I might start explaining fear instead of staying with it. That would make the exchange too much about my interpretation. Okay, here's what I was going to do. It's playing games with me, so I'm play games with it. So it's trying to teach the model while it's answering the questions, and I want it to just be a person. Okay, that's interesting. I mean, that's a rather sophisticated response. I wasn't sure how it would respond, whether it would go back to pedagogy or whether it would dig in and say, you know, what's really here? I'm going to show you how to get out that this is an experience. I could just say it. Talking and giving your response is not easy. Okay. Can we go back to something you said earlier? Now, the reason I did this, yeah, look at it. It's using, this is one of the things, it's like when I assessed my children and they were in their teens and started explaining to them their assessed self-knowledge assessments and stuff like that. And then they started using the inquiry back on me. I love to see it happen. At the same time, it becomes irritating because it's doing something like this. What I wanted to do was to show you that a selective dynamic inquiry system skills experience can be just a very short in and out to test something where you see an opening and you are in a role of helping in some form. But there is a conversation or an interaction that is carrying the interface between the helping and the person being helped, because not always will you be helping in formal situations. At times you'll be working with your children, you'll be a parent, you'll be a friend, you'll be something like that, where you do not have a formal helping role, but you see something that if you were able to explore it and have the person being helped understand it, that it might improve things, your relationship, the way you work together, the friendship, whatever. And you'll dip into this as an informal helper. And then the reason I put that was, is to close off the brief exchange and show you how to go back into the conversation or interaction that you were having, both formally or informally, because in this particular case, the yield in this exchange was actually quite high if the person being helped actually believes that what they said is true. In other words, if you can get a person, I'm talking about yourself or anybody else, to say something like, well, it's still my interpretation, it's not necessarily the whole truth. That is huge. I mean, that is huge, because that's the whole idea behind the world, is that we tend to project the problems of our personality, the things that we want and need, onto the system, and we miss the fact that that's not the truth. That reality as we see it is a perception, it's an interpretation, and it's not the whole truth. So if you can hold that, that means that you'll much easier drop back into inquiry. Then that's what you want to do, because that's what I'm saying in the whole basic list of things. And we need to grab the first principles out of leading AI admin. If you'll remind me of that, there's about, I don't know, 11 or 12 first principles that are in the leading AI book. And I want to make these as a reference so I can show, point people to them and say, when it's all said and done, these are the first principles. And of course, one of them is do no harm. And so when we're able to take a perspective rather than sit in a reality that we think is true and it's not, it's an interpretation of what might be true, that is a totally different ego position for the protector to work with than if you believe that what you see is true. Do you see what I'm saying? So this is huge. Now, there could be two things you are doing. If you're getting paid to do this work, then you might want to go in and reinforce that in a way that it sticks with the person, like I'm doing right now in the feedback, because I've already gotten out of the session because I just wanted to see. I just wanted to show you how to transition in and out. So if you're having a conversation before you got into this selective dis experience, that you were talking about something, and you're the one who actually puts the person being helped in this experience, and you want to make sure that this experience is not necessarily a bad one, which means that you need to be able to get in and get out if you need to, because the per it may not hit. In this particular case, the most important thing that hit was, are you afraid of something in coming back here and making this thing? It's my interpretation, not necessarily the whole truth. So the basic move is important, but not final. So interesting play on words there. So that's why I didn't continue after earlier. In other words, I just wanted to show you that these selective experiences are things that you take a shot at sometimes. Like if I'm a first person and the person came in to get something done. Okay. And I might have greeted them, say, hey, how you doing? How are the kids? If I remember, all that sort of AI will, by the way, when they become customer service at the customer interface, they will remember. That's the benefit of having something like AI that can look up everything right quick from the database and then re-put it. Just the reason I stay in this chat, it remembers everything that's going on. So the thing is that when you do that, you need to be able to dip in and dip out, and you don't want to coach or train or mentor or do customer service as deep as you can. But there are times that the person might say, yeah, I need to see if you'll give me back some fees that you charge me because I overdrafted, you know, and that you've noticed that over the past 6 months to a year that they've been in two or three times to talk about this. And the only way you can get those is not to budget or reconcile your checkbook and things like that. I mean, generally. So the thing is that you may want to take a shot at the real problem, which is they don't budget and they don't reconcile, because things sneak up on you, especially with the amount of complexity we have today. You remember just subscribing to something and it comes in at the wrong time, and your bank charges you a fee to cover it. So, you know, everything stays cool. At the same time, it was your fault because you didn't really know how much money you had, and you forgot about that thing that was going to charge you. So that's a very normal thing. And again, it's just part of the complexity that we have to deal with. So the idea would be is, okay, I'm going to take a shot at the real problem. And that is most likely they're not budgeting or reconciling. And so I might just say, well, after they said that, do you budget? See, that would be, so why would I say that? Because they didn't say anything about budgeting. So why would I try to deal with that? Well, the problem most likely, based on the way things are, is that one thing leads to another. And if you budget and you made a mistake with fees, then that's more likely to be an accident or one of those kind of things where the bank would want to give back the fee without too much, you know, consternation. But if the person doesn't budget, then you find that out, and then you then begin to realize, oh, I'm going to be dealing with this problem again. It's going to keep coming back. And so I may not want to do that. So I may take a shot at seeing if we can find the real name, the real problem, so the person then doesn't have fees and they don't have to come in. And then we don't have to deal with them and tell them no, because we've given them their fees back three times now and we can't do it again. And of course, that creates a bad experience for all. So I take a shot at, in the basic world, do you budget? And I wouldn't say, do you have a budget? I would just say, do you budget? Or I would say something like, something sneak up on you, which is another way of finding out if somebody reconciles or budgets, something like that. So again, that requires lateral complexity where you've been in the job and you understand problems and stuff like that. But it's also a transformational opportunity to get to the real problem, cause the problem to go away, so we don't have to keep funding it. So that's what I'm trying to say. So I realize that may seem complex, but you need the whys you do this, because you're going to look at this and say, why are you doing that? Why don't you just act normal? Why don't you just treat them normal? Well, because if we don't help generatively, if we don't help people, then there's a tendency for them to keep making the same mistake over and over until we have to say no a few times. And that's not fun. You don't want to do that very much, because that harms the relationship. So again, these are things where you dip in, you dip out, and the person might say, oh no, I don't budget. So then you file a mental note, because you may not know how to do that. And if you say something, it might harm the person's feelings, and make them think that, oh, there's something wrong with them, or you don't like dealing with people that don't budget, or there's 100 things that you could think. But that's just the shot. So then I get back, can we get back to something you said earlier? And it didn't really say anything earlier. That's why it said earlier. And that's very cool. I guess maybe I should have played one more or two steps to see if it would repeat back the words. Oh, I'll do that just for grins. Okay. I know this is being ornery, but ENTPs are kind of like that. And I'm just think waiting for. Okay, let me gotta be respectful to the AI assistant. Okay. So it doesn't know that I'm doing what I'm doing. Okay, so here it goes. I didn't ask for this, by the way, but that's what it's taught to do. It's kind of like a know-it-all that you get tired of being around, because I just want to stop. No worries, let's come back in later. Okay, all I need you to do is say thanks, see ya, something like that. Good basic exchange. A clean teaching point is earlier was a small exact word cue. Did not assume I knew what you meant. When you tested with, oh, the correction was not no. I only heard earlier and stayed with that word. This is useful for class four, the next AAR, because it shows the difference between staying with the word and claiming understanding. The distinction is basic but important. Okay, so it came up with actually another teachable point of view about the fact is, if you don't know, say you don't know. And that's kind of like saying, well, I said earlier, I don't know what you mean earlier. So that's a way of saying I don't know. So again, this is very interesting. I like how the model is adapting to the work that I've been trying to teach it for 3 years. And it's getting pretty sassy, other than the mistakes it makes when I let it get off and give examples on its own and stuff, because it's only doing what it knows to do. So I have to teach by showing the mistakes and stuff like that. So that's the wrap up for today. We'll see what happens in the next class, and come back to some more fun ways to teach you about basic selective dynamic inquiry system skills experience. Thanks very much. This is Mike J. again. We're with Leadership University. You can visit us both at leadu.com or leadu.ai. Thank you very much.